We can continue on. My name's Steve McEnroy, and I look forward to this part. I think it's important. I was thinking about it as a different people have been doing different sessions. I think it's good to remember that, you know, no matter what stage of life you're at, where you're at, if you're single or if you're married, you've been married for a while, if you're engaged or if you're just dating, if you're just trying to figure this all out, this is all just good information. There's going to be people in your lives along the way that you can share different truths with, that will be at different stages of life, whether it be your children or friends of yours or family members that are struggling with something. These truths, they'll apply across the board, and you'll have the privilege of sharing and helping other people with struggles they might be going through. But in-laws, that's the topic we're gonna truck through right here now is in-laws, and I have a couple maybe kind of funny things to start off with. I'm blessed. I've been a brother-in-law. I have sisters-in-laws. I've had a mother-in-law and a father-in-law, and I've come full circle now. I am a father-in-law. My wife is a mother-in-law, so God's helped us with some things. So I've had the opportunity to look at this idea of in-laws from a number of different angles. But I'll just ask you a question. What is the difference between outlaws and in-laws? And maybe you've heard this before, but outlaws are wanted. You know, that's kind of set the stage anyway. Maybe another little funny story for you. So David finally gets engaged, this fella David. He finally gets engaged, and he's excited, and he wants to talk to his mother. She hasn't met the beautiful wife-to-be yet, his fiance that he's got engaged to. He says, "Mom, I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to bring three women to the house. And I want you to guess which one is the one I've chosen to be my bride." She says, "Okay, let's do it." So she does. Sure enough, 20 minutes later, David brings three women into the house. And he introduced them to his mother, and he says, "Okay, now, Mom, decide. See if you can pick which one's actually going to be my bride." And she didn't hesitate a minute. She just chose one. She pointed out. She said, "I think maybe this one is." And he said, "I can't believe you picked the right one. How could you possibly pick the right one?" And she said, "Well, I just chose the one I didn't really like. I figured that would work out." You know, and that's not, I don't want to paint a picture of in-laws that is bad. In-laws can be very good. But there is a process that we go through when we're raised in a certain family and now we're coming together, two different families to come together. There's a process, without a doubt, that we have to step through. And I think there's biblical steps and there's maybe some practical things that we can take away from this session to help us with that. And we'll continue and share this verse again from Genesis. And Bill touched on a number of things that will overlap with what I have this morning. I think that's just God's kindness. It just applies in a number of different areas. "Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." And you've got the handout there before you, and I'm going to roll pretty closely with this handout and fill in the blanks and try to stay on track here. So we start at the top of that handout. It says, "The process of leaving and cleaving began with God, not man. God created marriage, then left fundamental steps for men and women to follow in order to have a thriving, successful marriages." And there's just a three-step process there. Man and woman, they must leave. They must cleave to one another. And this is the only way of becoming one flesh. So let's just look at leave. And there's a description there of forsake, leave behind, depart from. You know, this may seem cold, but there is a leaving. There's also, you need to have it with a growth mindset. That, you know, you leave childish things behind and you're stepping into this new relationship with your spouse-to-be. you know, your in-laws might be outlaws, so this idea may not only be refreshing, but it also may be a healthy step. In some cases, not all cases, it may be a healthy step for you to leave. And Bill mentioned last night, it might even help this new relationship to have a little bit of separation from in-laws as this new relationship begins. But we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Oftentimes, and I think in my life as well, there's situations where we speak into our children's lives too. So there's a balance in all of that. Let's look at six steps to leaving. The first one, the husband and wife relationship is now the primary relationship in your life. Number two, it means that you are more concerned about your spouse's needs and concerns than you are about your parents. And number three, it means that you must not try to change your mate simply because your parents do not like something about him or her. God is making something new out of the two of you in this marriage process. The two are becoming one. You know, maybe like Play-Doh, two different colors coming together and God's balling up to make one new, fresh color. And number four, it means that you are not primarily dependent on your parents for finances, affection, approval, counsel, etc. Like it says, there comes a time to put childish things away behind you and take on the full responsibility of life in this new position in a oneness of marriage. It's God's idea. Number four. Number five. Sometimes we must make decisions that are unpopular. For instance, probably this year, as we plan a new church in West Valley, there can come times where it may not be popular for you to move and go be part of a church plant with your in-laws. I had some in-laws in Colorado, my wife and I, and when we chose to come on a church plant to Utah, some of my sister-in-laws and brother-in-law, they were not happy about it at all. They thought it was a bad decision. They had us over to their house, and we were rebuked by the different families. But as husband and wife, we had to let them lovingly know we believe God is leading our family this way, and that's the way we're going to step into that. And oftentimes, it can just be unpopular. Your parents or your in-laws may not agree with the way God's leading you, and you have to just gently work through that and walk through that. Number six, keep personal issues personal between you and your spouse. We need to protect your spouse. We need to protect our spouses by not letting everything become public knowledge. Even the intimacies of our marriage, some of those things we need to protect and not share with our in-laws. Now let's look at six steps to cleaving. Cling to, stay close to, or join to is just a little description of that. It's really what cleaving is. It's the act of becoming one. And it is a mystery, like Bill talked about last night, this act of becoming one. That's God's plan. That's God's thing to bring the two to become one. Here's six steps to cleaving. The first one is keep God at the center of your marriage. You know, and that seems really fundamental and almost a no-brainer, but you're going to have to fight for this, to keep God at the center of your marriage, looking to him for everything, day in, day out. The day in and day out of marriage, hopefully you make a commitment for the rest of your life, day in and day out. God needs to be at the center of everything you do. Every disagreement, every decision, God needs to be at the center of it. So we need to keep God at the center of your marriage. Look to him for everything. Don't run past that. Remember, God has a plan. He gave us his word. There's a plan for marriage. There's a plan for in-laws and every disagreement we come up against. It's like Josh just shared with the conflict, that God has a plan to help us work through that. Be humble and teachable and seek out mentor couples to learn from. I think almost every session that we do will have this point. To pick out a mentor couple to learn from. You don't have it figured out yet. And certainly we're looking through the lens of a premarital seminar in this rock solid thing, but that goes on and on and on. They have couples in your life that you can learn from every step of the way. As I'm entering empty nesting places, I'm trying to learn from people that are a step ahead of me. So that's just a wise thing to do to implement into your life. Number three, prioritize other relationships as secondary and love for the long term. Well, certainly that's our plan. When you fall in love, yeah, this is forever. It's going to be forever. But there really is a change of relationship. You've been raised in a family a certain way, and your spouse-to-be has been raised in a family a certain way. You have two different worlds coming together, coming to really in a collision course to try to work through things. But you as a young spouse even, or maybe if you've been along the way, the husband is the lead, like Josh shared a minute ago, the husband is the lead, but you need to have a shared vision that the wife and the husband agree on with goals or someplace that you want to get to. You got to have a shared vision for the long term. So you had a lifestyle for a while, and maybe it was career, and you're just trying to figure out how to be single, and then all of a sudden that's ending, and there's a new chapter in your life, and you need to come together with this other person who's had all these other dreams and these careers and these other ways of doing life and wanting to climb Mount Everest and everything else, and you come together, and you need to agree and have a shared vision on where you're going, what your relationship, how you will be kingdom builders together. Number four, be content at or below your current standard of living. Typically, now this isn't across the board, but typically, if you've been living with your parents or they've been taking care of you for all these years, you have a husband and wife that worked hard for 20, 30 years, and they have a nice home and a car, and things are kind of stable and established. And oftentimes, as a young couple, you're stepping out of that, and it won't be the same type of situation. You may have to tighten your belt. Things are just harder. You have to prepare for that and not expect the same things you had necessarily with your parents and when you come together. Now, that's not across the board. Some of you have careers and you're stepping in, and maybe it's even a step up, moving on up to the east side. But typically it's just something you have to start working through and learn how to manage your money and all the different things that go with that, because two people coming together is challenging enough without financial struggles and other types of things. Number five. Learn how to remain sexually active. I know you want to say, preach it, brother. that's coming up here in a little bit. We'll talk about it. And number six, forgive each other 70 times 7. Keep short accounts. This is so important. It's so easy to get past this. It's so important that you take care of today's troubles today so they won't be a trouble tomorrow. You can take care before the sun goes down that you forgive and you have a clean slate as husband and wife as you go on to the next day. Or even as brothers and sisters, we need to learn how to forgive, how to completely take things out of the picture so they're behind us so we don't have to deal with them again tomorrow. And here's just some biblical principles. Moving on. Number one, a husband and wife must be united. You need to fight for unity. The world loves chaos and division. the world we live in, they really feed on this type of thing. There's sitcoms on television that just, they're popular because of highlighting these different divisions and chaos. But we need to be men and women who just fight to be united day in and day out. So like Josh said, we're at that 100% united. I like that verse from Luke chapter 11, verse 17. Any kingdom divided against itself will be ruined, and a house divided against itself will fall. You're a team. Number two, I love what Bill said last night about being a commando team. Think of that, my wife and I as a commando team, and God has put us in this kingdom business for his purposes, and it's exciting to labor together, to battle together for the purposes of the kingdom. I'm excited about that. God often puts different personalities together. It's amazing how you can be so much different than your spouse. And opposites do attract. That's often the case. My wife and I are wired very differently. Very differently. But God brought these very different people, her and me, together and put us together not just to humor himself, but what happens is our oneness unfolds as he teaches us, as iron sharpens iron, as this commando team, as we grow, it really does become more and more, like Bill talked last night, a reflection of God. That her weaknesses, my strengths complement her weaknesses. Her strengths complement my weaknesses. I think it's just God's kindness to us to put us together to help each other in this thing called life. I like this verse from Ecclesiastes. It says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. And in a marriage context, I think we can apply these verses. Number three, appreciate your spouse for who they are, not what you want them to be. This is typically a challenge in different couples. You want them to be this way, or you try to be your spouse's personal Holy Spirit, and you want them to do this. I like this verse from the Psalms. It says, for you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. God really knew what he was doing as he created each and every one of us. Point number four, each person must die to themselves. This is really hard. It's really hard to die to ourselves, but it's important. I like this verse from Philippians. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Point number five, keep the fire burning. Cleaving is believing this is God's best for you. They're leaving, where you leave the parents that have raised you, and you're stepping in, you're leaving in to join your spouse, and you cleave together. It's believing that you make a commitment and a covenant before God. There's a promise, there's a oneness that happens, and in that you need to believe this is God's best for you. As you get married, as you make a commitment, you promise God you're going to be with this one person for the rest of your days, that this is God's gift to you. And it's God's idea that you would be with this one. And really, oftentimes, as husband and wife, we need to receive that gift because it's a gift from the Lord. Receive it completely. You need to receive my wife. This is the gift that God has given for me personally. And to be thankful for her. And she needs to receive me as her gift and to be thankful for each other. That's what God intended to have us together. I like this verse from Proverbs. It says, may your fountain be blessed. and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth, a loving doe, a graceful deer. May her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be captivated by her love. Keep the fire burning. There's just some practical tips in the area of in-laws. I'll just read that paragraph to start this off. In every marriage, there can be tension as two people are united, along with their two different families. It is important to maintain the proper perspective with in-laws. The following are some brief helps on relating. One, get to know your in-laws. This requires prioritized effort, especially if they are some distance away. You need to get to know each other, and it does. As points out there, it provides insight to your spouse's attitudes and behavior. So it's a wise thing to get to know them, and it helps you get to know your spouse even a little bit better. And number two there, don't expect your in-laws to act or respond like your family. Remember, different families are exactly that, different. That doesn't make them wrong. They're just different. Consciously start out with a clean slate and trying to understand them. Don't gossip about them. Try to learn and glean the best things you can from them. Learn to love and appreciate the differences. Point three, love and serve your in-laws. Now that I'm a father-in-law, I love this one. Without expectation of anything in return. Family can always, sometimes it can be a really difficult thing, but we need to serve and love one another. That's always a good way to be the fragrance of Christ to your family. When they visit and when you visit them, clean up after yourselves. Constantly ask them, is there anything more I can do? And not even wait for them to direct you to help them, but step ahead and go ahead and do it without them even asking you. And just be a blessing to them wherever you can. And point C there, be extra forbearing and forgiving when difficulties arrive. The one little story I'll tell you about for myself for being forgiving, before I even knew Jesus, there was I remember distinctly a profound moment in Jeannie's and in my marriage when I was at her mother's funeral. And I knew her mother, and I loved her mother, and I knew her father. And there was some difficulty. In fact, her parents were separated. And there, some hard things had come to light that we had learned that had transpired throughout their life. And at the funeral, I remember distinctly we were there with the family, and I was with her brother-in-laws and sister-in-laws, and we were all mourning, and we were actually out at the gravesite. And I got out of the car, and her dad was there. And I had a very strained relationship with her dad. In fact, I didn't like him at all, for a number of different reasons. But when he came, he was physically, because of his lifestyle, he physically couldn't hardly walk. So we're at the gravesite there, and nobody went to help him out of the car to come to the event. And I was looking around at all my in-laws and all the family, and it just broke my heart because I thought of her mother, who was a godly Christian woman, Jeannie's mother, and I thought, you know what? She would want me to help him. She would want me to forgive him. And in that moment, that was just kind of like a watershed moment, even in our marriage. I forgave the man, and I walked over, and I helped him. He took my arm, and I kind of held him up through the whole gravesite service. And there was just such I wasn't even a Christian at the moment, at that time, but I know there was just such I remember there being just such a relief. There's just something about forgiveness. It's just like breathe fresh life into our relationship. That I could understand my wife a little more intimately, a little more deeper once we got past that, and I was able to forgive her father for the things that he'd done. And there will be times where you will need to forgive what's happened in the past. Forgiveness is just such an important step to walk through. We've all lived some lives, and there's some history, and there's things that we've been through, but we need to be able to forgive and move on. Number four, be intentional in the time you spend with both families, within reason, because this can be sensitive. And I'm on a learning curve on this right now. It's like holidays can be, you know, are they going to be with us, or are they going to be with the other in-laws, or are we going to go there? Are we going to do this? You know, I'll trade you Memorial Day and Labor Day and an Easter morning if you can come to my house on Christmas. There's just certain things that you get challenged with in-laws, and you want to honor and respect both sides of the family, but you need to be intentional to try to be fair. It's important. Number five, there's a blessing in honoring both sets of parents. There's no time limit on the following promise, and this is a verse that we're going to end with for this session. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on earth. It is important. There is a leaving. There is a cleaving, and there's a process. But there's also an impetus. We need to honor our father and mother for the long run. Somehow there's a balance where God will help us to work through that. I'm going to go ahead and say a prayer, and that's the end of our in-laws talk. Father God, I thank you for in-laws. I thank you for the process of leaving and cleaving, Lord. Lord, I look at it and I see it as supernatural. You're the one that does that. You're the one that helps us through it. And I thank you, you said in your word, you'll never leave us nor forsake us. You're going to help us through this process. You promised that you will be there. I praise you for that, God. I pray you continue to help us to be men and women that honor you with our lives and that honor our parents, both sets, God, as we walk through this process of becoming one. And I just pray that in your name, Jesus. Amen.